how big is the opportunity for tokenization? I mean, there's literally hundreds of trillions of dollars in real-world assets which stand to gain from tokenization. Larry Fink, it's on TV every day right now talking about it. We have real estate, over $280 trillion global market, commodities, infrastructure, art and collectibles, financial instruments, over $100 trillion. The integration of these assets into blockchain through tokenization allows for fractional ownership and easier transfer of ownership rights. What will this do? Increase liquidity and the market size of real-world assets even further. Tokenization is a way to democratize access to these assets and enhance their attractiveness as investment opportunities, particularly when regulatory frameworks are developed to support such innovations. Did you catch that? That big scary word, regulation? That's what's missing right now, a regulation-ready blockchain. In today's episode, we are joined by John Mullen, CEO and co-founder of Mantra and Soma Finance. In this candid episode, we discuss the RWA narrative and the potential for tokenized assets, what led Mantra token Ohm to gain over 1,000% in Q1, why Mantra built an L1 on Cosmos that is specifically designed to accommodate regulatory compliance for a broad spectrum of real world and tokenized assets, the business model of Mantra as a chain and an ecosystem, and the launch of Hongbai Testnet, which has attracted over 75,000 users in just 48 hours, and the opportunity for you, our listeners, to capitalize. GMGM, welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Hamilton, and I believe that on-chain is the next online. This is the opportunity, and I'm here to guide you to capitalize. GM, John, welcome to Milk Road Radio.
Thank you, sir. In my language right now, I would be saying LM. I just purchased a Celestine slot this week, and we're all about lazy mornings, so good to see you, man.
I love it. I might start LM. I got a 10-month-old kid, so I don't have any LMs these days.
You don't have LM.
Yeah, you know, I don't either. I got 18 years sure. Till I get an LM. Okay, absolutely. We got to start with RWA is one of the hottest crypto narratives right now. I was looking up some stats up on across the whole sector, 280% returns on RWA in Q1 2024. And was briefly actually at one point in like Jan, Feb, RWA was the most profitable narrative in crypto. But then in February, you guessed it, meme coins took over and the AI narrative as well. But let's start with RWA broadly. Why is it one of the leading narratives in crypto right now?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think there's a few things. One thing is just actually there is the concept of fundamentals coming in to the game. You know, RWAs are implying that there's something with real world value getting moved on chain. Mm-hmm. I still think there's a lot to unpack there. And frankly, a lot of RWA projects are just total narrative right now, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But it is this like enticing thought that there's real fundamentals coming into the space, that, you know, TradFi or finance is actually coming on chain. And that is true in some degree. I mean, not entirely, but it's getting there. So I think that idea is becoming more of a thing. There was a good tweet thread by Regan Bozeman from Lattice Fund talking about how he thinks that RWAs now have PMF, product market fit, because mm-hmm. there's over $1 billion of, you know, tokenized treasuries mm-hmm. on public blockchains nowadays. I've said that I think that it has better PMF with institutions than retail. Mm-hmm. And I'll pull a number real quick that there's been over a trillion dollars of tokenized treasuries on the JP Morgan Onyx permission blockchain, private blockchain.
Yes.
So like, you know, a trillion to a billion, big difference. But, you know, you can see that this is starting to become a real thing, both mm-hmm. at the more retail as well as the institutional level. So I think that's part of it. And, you know, frankly speaking, when you got, you know, Larry Fink shilling asset tokenization, which is effectively mm-hmm. RWAs on CNBC every day, that helps.
Why do you say that tokenization has more of a fit with institutions than with retail? Is that from conversations that you're having with institutions that's giving you that conviction? Is that from a broader view of the space right now?
Well, a bit of both, but definitely probably more the latter, just of how I've kind of like formulated my thought on the industry. I don't really like the term RWA, frankly.
Okay.
No, I think it's kind of bullshit. Honestly, like we're an RWA project, but we've been doing RWA since it was before it was called RWA. So like
Right.
it used to be called SEO, and there's all these other different names for tokenization. I just think it's purely tokenization and bringing tokenized things or making things tokenized effectively, right? Bringing real world products on chain. And in the TradFi speak, RWA means risk-weighted assets. So it's actually kind of confusing, and it's not a great acronym for, I think, what we want to develop over time. But it's a narrative now. We're building in it, whatever, we'll stick to it. But it is just more tokenization to me. So
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things. I mean, being in this space for a long time, we did regulated like tokenization offering in 2019, where we tokenized a professional basketball player's contract. Having seen how everything developed since then, frankly, it's just been a lot of problems and a lot of speculation and a lot of hype, but not a lot of substance. There's still issues with liquidity. There's still issues with regulatory frameworks. There's still a lot of just technical user experience challenges when it comes to doing anything on chain. And we live in this little bubble. We like, I'm talking like we as in crypto native, people. We live in this little bubble, I think, sometimes where we think that everyone just wants to use like signing keys and ledgers and all this stuff to transact. It's like, frankly speaking, that is a horrendous experience, right? It's just not good.
It's awful.
And that needs it's awful, and having been building in DeFi for the last 4 years, there's a lot of risks there. You don't know what the hell you're buying sometimes. You don't know what the smart contract means. You don't know what this wallet address is. And like that's a again a horrendous user experience. So there's a lot of stuff to fix. It just makes me feel even more bullish to see how freaking early we are, because I can see where it's all going. And yeah, I mean, but it is exciting to be, we're kind of at the forefront of pushing this narrative, pushing this trend, actually not a new narrative, pushing the trend of asset tokenization. I think trend is more apt here because it feels more real. Narrative is feeling a little bit more hypey. And that's an exciting thing because there's just so much potential. I mean, I think our tagline is like unlocking the $16 trillion RWA industry, one of the taglines. But frankly speaking, 16 trillion is probably small.
Yeah,
Actually,
that's
it is small, not probably.
it is. I love that you say you don't love that name. Now I'm like, okay, what can we call? Do you have a better name? I gotta ask that.
Let's call it RWA for this one, I guess. I'm not, that's above my pay grade, sir.
Yeah. You got Larry Fink on the phone. Can we call him up? He just says tokenization. He doesn't really say RWA, right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it isn't said RWA.
Okay, I gotta go back for a second. Tell me, you've tokenized a professional basketball player contract. I don't know this story. You got to tell this story quick. This fits
Yeah.
very, the milkman's gonna love this story.
Absolutely, man. So back before even Mantra launched, I was just coming out of working on a centralized exchange project. The two bear markets ago was like in full swing. This is like 2018, 2019 days. We just had the big sell-off from 20K to 3K in Bitcoin, and we're trying to figure out what the space was going to be doing basically, other than like I scammy ICOs. So I had basically been working with a partner in a group in the US called Tritorian Capital. They're a US broker dealer. We spent a good portion of 2018 working with FINRA, which is the governing body for broker dealers. And we had basically went to them and said, hey, we have a we meaning the broker dealer have a private placements license for traditional securities. We want to do this with blockchain. Let us do it. So we asked them and they said, absolutely not the same thing, which others were just doing it. And we're just like,
The
what the
fuck?
heck? You can't do it. We talked. Yeah. We freaking talked to the guys and they said, don't do it. Anyway, they're all not working anymore. And we are. So that's, it's good. Basically, we got this license issued after like literally just thousands of calls, emails, like paperwork. I really got to give it to our partners, Bill and Jim, for getting that across the line. It's like really incredible. But we got this license and we expect a ton of fanfare and literally like crickets, because like the way that the US regulators work is they don't share when you've done something. Like they
Right.
don't promote like that you got a license, which is fine. But then basically I had seen on like CoinDesk, there was an article about Spencer Dinwiddie. Spencer Dinwiddie was a point guard on the Brooklyn Nets. I think he's on the Lakers right now, if I'm not mistaken. And he wanted to tokenize his contract. And he has this like moniker, like tech guy with a jumper, and like he wanted to be an industry leader. He's been in crypto, which I think is really awesome. I saw that, and I'm a big basketball fan, big sports fan in general. Actually, I do like the Lakers, although I think my favorite team is Cincinnati Bengals. Go Joe.
You said you're from Ohio originally.
I'm from Ohio. Yeah.
Okay. That adds up. Yeah. Joe Burrow. Hopefully he plays a full season, but anyways, we don't need to go down that.
I love
that
Joe, man. Yeah. We'll talk about that later. And anyway, I literally just reached out to this professional basketball player on LinkedIn and I was like, hey, I saw your article. Like, we have a license. We can help you with this. We should talk. And I didn't expect really a reply, but he replied. And, you know, basically we started talking to the team. Kind of long story short, they ended up going with two different broker dealers first that didn't have a license. Okay. And they both got shut down. And then we were kind of like the third time's a charm, got around to do it. We had a ton of fanfare for this offering. We did under a Reg D private placement, which is an accredited only. I think it would have been cooler to do it under retail, like a Reg CF or something, which actually is what we're doing now on the US side. But, you know, they didn't. For whatever reason, it's fine. And, you know, unfortunately, by the time that the transaction was actually about to close, COVID happened. No one's investing in a basketball player shitcoin when the world is literally imploding and the basketball league is, you know, NBA shutting down. And I'm pretty sure Spencer got COVID himself. So like technically the asset had COVID. we were tokenizing COVID. So anyway, we got the transaction done, but
unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, it's a good test case. And we learned a lot from the regulator on how to do stuff and how to operate and whatnot. So, I mean, a lot of this experience for myself has just been like trying it. Honestly, things just not really working out perfectly, but you make progress and then you kind of go back. I mean, it sometimes works out great for a while, but then, you know, it's not lasting and you got to go back to drawing board, figure it out, improve. And that's just a part of life, I think. But
and you know what? That's a great reminder for all the founders and entrepreneurs that are listening right now. You're going to listen to the show and we're going to talk about Mantra and all this incredible success that you guys have had recently. And it might be easy for you to sit there and think, oh, well, John just made it overnight. And it's like, no. He was in the trenches dealing with this shit for years, trying to do this, having many failures. And that's what leads to the end success. I want to talk about the success that you guys have had. Mantra is the leading RWA token in Q1 2024, up over 1,000%. What's driven the incredible rise of your token price?
I got to preface everything as not financial advice, NFA. I think there's been a few different things that have really, you know, been pushing us. You know, I think obviously there is just being positioned and aligned with a good narrative, and we're positioned and aligned, but the reason that we are is because we've been building this particular like thing specifically for the last 18, 24 months. Mm-hmm. And not calling it RWA. We've just been building in trenches, you know, honestly suffering, like legitimately suffering during the bear market. I mean, for the first time in like nearly 2 years, I'm taking a little bit of a salary and it's basically just to pay my rent. And I've been putting money into the business, like to basically keep things afloat for, you know, 2 years. Literally, you know, but you got to do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that is paying off, right? Like all the hard work from the last, you know, bear cycle is like coming to fruition now and you're getting that repricing. I think one of the other bits is that we had basically when we launched, I mean, I won't get into the entire story of Mantra right now, but Mantra when it initially launched was actually like a DeFi app or DAO token. Mm-hmm. So it's like a DAO dApp utility token. In the beginning of the year, we basically had a DAO proposal that was community led. Where basically we merged our plans for a Cosmos L1 blockchain, RWA blockchain, which initially was going to have its own separate token and our existing token into one. And then we created like a unified tokenomics. So like OM or OM has effectively become or gone from a DApp token to an L1 token. And that repricing is significant. I mean, we are the RWA L1 right now, right? Rather than just a RWA DApp token. And I think that has a pretty significant bearing here. And then finally speaking, like our tokenomics are fairly unique in the sense that we've been around for 4 years. We're at least on the Ethereum side of the token supply, like over 90% in circulation. We're obviously expanding the supply with the new mainnet coming. But even when we launch mainnet, the token's going to be like 50% in circulation. So it's not like we're going to be this like super high FTV, low float kind of token, which actually like sometimes it is a disadvantage because like we can't launch just like if we launch now straight up, we'd probably be like a 10B, like whatever kind of crazy FTV thing if we wanted to. But then obviously you're facing a shitload of dilution down the line. And like right now, instead, we don't have to do that. We have maybe less like, hey, we're launching and our token's worth $10 billion. It's cheap now and we can do whatever the hell we want. obviously just kicking the can down the road for the dilution coming. But in this case, you know, it's slightly different. Thankfully, we've had a good run up, so that's been good. And you know, honestly speaking, the other good thing is we're just on Binance, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, wild. Yeah, the power of Binance is just, it's truly insane. It's insane. But, and it's very interesting because, you know, I'm in Canada, being in North America. I mean, being in Canada, I'm basically American in terms of my media and my news and the exchanges I use, right? We don't see Binance here. We don't talk about Binance here. It's not on my radar, but you're in Hong Kong. Yeah. And every time I talk to anybody outside of North America, basically, it's all Binance.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Wow.
We're not on Coinbase yet. We're working on it.
You'll get there soon, I'm sure.
And two ones we want Coinbase and we need the Koreans. We need that Korean pump. My wife's Korean, so.
I just want to mention one more time that just so everybody knows, Mantra's ticker is OM, OM. So you might hear us say OM or hear us say Mantra. That's what the token ticker is, just so you're up to speed. Okay, let's jump into Mantra. We've kind of talked a little bit around it. Tell us, what is Mantra Chain? What are you guys building? Maybe take us back. Sometimes I find the best way to explain the story is a little bit like, what's the problem you saw? And as you said, you've been building for longer, trying other things. What led you down this path?
Absolutely. So my first foray into officially working in crypto was in 2017. I started working on a centralized exchange project. I'd been doing like research at a bank before, and I was, you know, pretty early Bitcoin adopter. So I got my first Bitcoin like 2013, but that was just on personal capacity. So I got my first job in 2017 in crypto full-time. Working on this exchange, we were looking to basically create like a regulated-ish or like more buttoned up style platform where you could trade all of in products under one roof, crypto assets, securities, STOs, FX, whatever. And that was like the initial vision. And I think it's kind of persisted just in different forms. The idea of building a regulated like KYC exchange in 2017 out in Asia was ridiculous because, you know, that wasn't a feature, that was a bug here.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody wanted that.
Actually, right? Nobody wanted that, You know, so that was a good lesson. But, you know, additionally, like we kind of moved on. We did that tokenization deal in the US. We started working with regulatory bodies. That went well. COVID happened. We basically like, honestly, I was like going broke. I need to figure something out. So we ended up launching this DeFi. We've been, you know, pretty early DeFi adopters in 2019. We're using like early Uniswap V1 and playing around and whatnot. Basically, we wanted to build something in DeFi, started working on building this project called MantraDAO. We actually were initially going to be launching on Polkadot. We had this like idea for this DAO that was governed by the community that had retail focused financial products. And that's how we came up with the name, actually. It's like mantras, you say them to have peace of mind, like rhythmic hymns that you say over time. Om is one of the first, like om, and you like say it over and over again. You kind of chant it. And the whole idea was to be like calm with your financial well-being and you know, peace. And om is the first mantra, of course. The idea of DAOs being both the DAO religion, the Taoism, as well as the decentralized autonomous organization. Like that was how MantraDAO came about. We launched that, and obviously, as we mentioned, all the perils of DeFi, smart contracts, rugs, scams, sending things to the wrong wallet, like all this stuff. So we did all that, and we're like, okay, this is great. But after about a year, we had some good progress. We got listed on Binance in March of 2021, so we've been there for nearly 3 years. And the DeFi bubble popped, like literally 2 weeks after we got listed on Binance. And it was like down only. Everyone went into the NFTs and GameFi, played Earn, you know, whatever. So we went back to the drawing board and wanted to basically create something that had a bit more sustainability to it and a bit more of a competitive moat. Well, we got back in touch with our US partners and we're like, okay, let's build something bringing this license and our DeFi on-chain tech, because we didn't have those the first time around when we did the basketball deal. So we started working on this. We were looking at the US market for basically creating like a permissioned trading DEX for primarily for tokenized equities. And actually that's still happening for the US market. It's called Soma Finance. So you can check that out as well. It's like our US brand. So like that's really kind of the focus for that market. Mm-hmm. The idea is that we, you know, trade on equities can trade 24/7 and they can trade in a fractionalized way and they can also be redeemable. It'll be the first of its kind when it launches and it's not too far off. But it's been a challenge. I mean, like the US market has been a brutal challenge and from a regulatory perspective. And it's been, you know, very hard to deal with, honestly speaking. But because of that experience, we're able to learn a lot about what the regulator is looking at, how to build permissioned, regulated, compliant on-chain applications for trading, for investing, for issuance, et cetera. We started building on Ethereum mainnet and other EVM L2s to start. And we also saw issues there. Like obviously building anything on chain requires gas, requires keys, transactions, mm-hmm. wallets, et cetera. You can't do that on ETH really. Now, this, I mean, you know, unless you're just like a DeFi OG and or ETH OG and you don't care about paying.
You don't care.
Yeah, you don't care. Yeah. So for some, you don't, but for a lot, you do. As everything slowed down in the US with the regulatory landscape shifting and FTX imploding and all this stuff going on in the background, we basically started looking elsewhere for other opportunities, other markets where we could operate in on an international basis. So that's when we basically started looking. And I literally did this like regulatory roadshow. I went from the US where I was staying at the time because I was locked out of Hong Kong for because of COVID, not locked out, but I was stuck. Went through Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Singapore, Hong Kong, like all on one trip all the way back. Okay. I met with regulators every place. And we ended up basically settling on Dubai as our home. They just launched VARA, the Virtual Asset Regulatory Authority. We wanted to basically get licensed there to give us a home base where we could operate compliantly. It's been a process there too. Do not get me wrong. I mean, we still don't have our license. It's been nearly 2 years. We're very, very close. I will say that. Last mile, I can assure you of that. Fingers crossed like I would.
Yeah.
But it's been a process. We know as we got that, we also kind of were like, initial vision, we'd always thought we would have our own chain. We had been like very early validators for many Cosmos SDK blockchains. We ran validators for a lot of different proof of stake blockchains, including the fated Luna and, you know, others. I was OG Luna, to be honest. That was also going on in the background for all this stuff. But anywho, we kind of saw that we needed to basically build a technological stack that was purpose-built for our use case, that supported asset tokenization, that supported identity management, that supported token creation and controls, that supported permissioning and compliance like SDK effectively. And you know, that's when we were like, okay, we've been running these Cosmos nodes for a long time, these Cosmos ecosystem nodes for a long time. The Cosmos SDK tech stack is amazing. IBC is like incredible. We don't want to have to deal with bridging. We want to have a sovereign chain that we can upgrade as needed to adhere to, you know, changing and different regulatory requirements around the world,
yeah.
rather than having to be beholden to other like L1 that we're just taking security from. So there's a lot of different things that we're considering. And obviously like Cosmos as an ecosystem was still kind of like, it's not nascent, but it was still kind of seen as like the weird techie yeah. guys that were like, oh, well, we're just doing their thing. But it started kind of having its own moment. So we just started to build, you know, a Cosmos app chain. And we subscribed to that app chain thesis. We have our protocol, which is the Mantra chain. We have our application that's an on-chain club for trading these types of products. So yeah, so like, you know, taking all that in a nutshell, we're really just heavily focused on bringing finance on chain mm-hmm. in a way that is retail friendly. We're trying to really focus. I mean, right now I understand our target market is still crypto natives, but like where I'm building for is a market that's not pure crypto natives, and they don't want to have to deal with keys. They don't want to have to deal with, am I sending this to the right person? They don't want to have to deal with gas. Like we're we're basically building it to be from the palm of your hand, one click, or, you know, similar style, one click experience between your wallet, your bank account, your brokerage account, your real estate investment portfolio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like that's the world that I want to live in.
And when you went on this regulatory roadshow, which sounds sort of awesome, but also sort of like scratching my fingernails across a chalkboard, to be perfectly honest, one of the key things that you guys always talk about is being a compliant ready and compliant enabled L1. Mm. What does that mean? How is that different than the other L1s that are out there?
Sure. I mean, I think I get this question a lot, like why another L1? How are you guys different, et cetera? I mean, I think there's a few areas, and maybe that's the better way to answer the question. So it gives a little bit more context. One thing, you know, is just the team. We've been building in this space for years. So like, if you could call it a RWA OG, like I feel like our team is that. We've got that experience, and we've been sticking together throughout the bear market, even if it's been tough. So we've been slowly building towards this mission, and now we're here. So like, I think that's a big advantage. We're very focused on one specific thing, which is asset tokenization and, you know, RWAs, which I think is also just different than a general purpose smart contracting platform or blockchain. Like that's our core focus, even though that niche is like a $1 trillion thing. Great, I guess, you know.
It's just crazy. It's a big fucking niche.
Big fucking niche, yeah. We have been doing the compliance and regulatory legwork with getting licensing It's not just like, oh, we're going to spin up some new code and it's great, now we can do this stuff. Like, no, no, no. We've been in the trenches, building relationships, spending time, spending money, frankly, with lawyers and, you know, regulators, mm-hmm. and doing all this stuff that will give us distribution capabilities that no one else will have. Like, you know, I'm not going to say name, but if any just general purpose L1 would go out and say, oh, I want to launch a regulated DEX now, that like, it's not the business model. And two, like, okay, get the license. I say this all the time. You can't fork a license.
Right.
You know, you
can fork code,
but you can't fork a license, right? It's a real world thing. That's the whole point of real world assets, right? Like, we've been doing the work in the real world, which is the hard part. And then I think the last bit is just our backers are, our biggest investors are not Web3 native. Mm. Like, our biggest investor is called Sharuk Partners. They're based out of the UAE from Abu Dhabi. It's founded by Shane and Mahmoud, two ex-Mubadala guys. Mubadala is a sovereign wealth fund from Abu Dhabi. There's nine, I think, sovereign wealth funds that are LPs of Sharuk, including, you know, Saudi, Korea, Egypt, and a few others. So like super, super institutional capital at literally the sovereign level, which is amazing. That's like real world money, real world capital. I mean, it's just a different thing than like a Web3 fund. That doesn't mean that there's not value that we want to get from Web3 native funds. That's definitely, we definitely want that. But it just is like, we have the real world part of real world assets. And I think that's an incredibly important thing, because when you go into these conversations with institutions, with asset originators on the, or just, you know, buy and sell side institutions, like, it just changes the game, because they're like, okay, you're not just a random scammy crypto team that is going to like cut and run. One, we've been building this specifically mantra for 4 years and continue to iterate and continue to work on it. So, you know, they know that we're here for the long run, which we are. I mean, I'm inevitably and forever long myself. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you're still here after a few bear markets and a lot of pain. So I think that shows that you're battle tested for sure.
I mean, I'm just not in it. I mean, I'm in it for the fucking journey, and I just like the, there's a reason I get up at 6 a.m. to do this call, because I like this stuff. You know, I think that really comes across, and it helps that the markets that we're operating in, literally at the highest level, there's support for the industry. And, you know, that just gives us a lot of opportunities to really like do pretty freaking amazing stuff. I mean, we have like crazy, crazy BD and partnerships behind the scenes that hasn't even come out yet. Like, one of the goals that I want to have is for the team is like, I want the industry to basically say, like, you know how everyone's like, Polygon has the best BD team. Well, we're about to beat that. Like, that's
okay.
The goal. No hating on Polygon, right? I mean, we were in Genesis Validator on Polygon too. They've done amazing stuff. It's super aspirational, but we want to be better. I'm competitive as hell, so
I'm going to
improve.
Okay, let's get into a little bit about the business. One thing that I think gets so lost often, and we talk about this a lot about Milk Road, is people like to talk about the tech, but let's talk about the business, because yes, building the tech is so important, but unless you actually have a business plan and a business model that you're building towards and you understand how you're going to make revenue, look, none of this can amount to anything. You're really, as you said yourself early in the episode, there's a lot of RWA projects that are kind of jumping on the narrative right now, but maybe not necessarily building a sustainable business. Tell us about, what is the business model for Mantra? How do you guys make revenue, maybe now and in the future? I know things are changing so fast.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's been really a good process to have to build and raise money, because we recently raised a round in the bear market. Because it really, really requires you. Well, one, it's just freaking brutal to raise money in a bear, honestly. I mean, we were trying to raise for like 18 months. I mean, it was just literally, we were like going out to raise money as Luna is crashing. Oh, and then we started getting some traction, and then FTX blew up, and we're like, okay, hold on, like, let's just keep building. That was a challenge. But it does require you to really focus on being focused, you know, not doing too much shit, finding what is the attractive thing for investors to participate in, focusing on the business to build something that's real, and really focusing on your numbers and this, and making sure that you're legitimate. So like, that whole process has been really good for us. It's made us stronger. But in that kind of like focusing, we really had to focus on like, how does this business grow, and how do we actually create value at both the token and the equity level? Because, you know, the way that the group works, Mantra Group, is effectively we have like a group structure that services Mantra, like the token issuing entities outside, right? On the group level, we basically are like a headcount plus a little bit of like a little bit of margin that basically is like building things for the foundation, association, whatever. That's like to keep the lights on revenue. That's not meant to, you know, make a ton of money, but it's just meant to continue to make sure that we can continue to build. You know, that's basically funded via the treasury. That model was not from the chain or the ecosystem perspective. It's not only going to be for us, that like that's for other people too, right? Like any other dev studios that we work with. But we also, as the founding team, core contributor team, like we have the long tail upside in Ohm, right? So we have a, you know, pretty substantial claim on Ohm TNA at the group level, not only at the individual level. So the team and individually has exposure. We do something where effectively we have this, I mean, not that we're even in the remote, like we're literally, everyone's revested their tokens because we're issuing new supplies. Like no one's liquid, even though we've been building for 4 years, we have another multiple years ahead before anyone's taking money off the table, which is good. Mm-hmm. Again, forever long myself. But the idea is that we have this thing where basically no one ever gets tokens directly. We all, if ever there is a divestment, it happens, you know, via best execution with the market maker. And then the proceeds are distributed pro rata. So you don't have this first man out to sell is like, it's a prisoner's dilemma if you don't do it like that, because, you know, hey, he's going to do it, so I should fucking do it too. Yeah, fuck totally. That. We're not trying to, you know, all dump on one day. It's not how it, you know, it's just not how it works. It's not good for the community. It's not good for anyone. So we've had this model always. So that's like the general like consulting technology service model. But then at the same time, we are building an on-chain exchange application that will be licensed and regulated in the UAE. That's just really an exchange model, transaction fees, listing fees, et cetera. Yeah. It is a permissioned exchange. I don't know if we're actually going to have listing fees, probably paid in Ohm or something. But you know, there is an exchange style business model, which is transactional volume, et cetera. We're looking for other ways that the group can make money. I mean, within the group, we have different businesses. We have the chain, we have the exchange, we have the USPs, and maybe others in the future. They'll have their own unique business model. I envision that they'll all have their own token as well. Like the long-term strategy for the group is effectively, like, I just believe in like a tokenized world in general, and everything should have its own token if you can, and only if you can, create a unique value accretive token model that both aligns the equity interest in the shareholders as well as the token holder interest. So if that doesn't get met, then there's no token. But if that can get met, which I think in many cases it can, then it's a good opportunity to have, you know, two parts of the capital stack, the token capital as well as the equity capital. And I effectively think that our Mantra Group business is effectively like the DeFi DCG or the DeFi consensus or the tokenization focused consensus, where it's like a holding company brand with different products. That's kind of what I want to, how I want to build it. And again, I just want to, but I want to build this more of an international style, internationally focused, with a token spin on everything. I mean, I hope that someday, if we ever go public, I mean, not only will we go public in a, you know, traditional stock exchange, but we'd go public on our own exchange in a token.
That'd be, I mean, that's the way it should be anyways, right? That's 100%, the way everybody should be going public. And I think,
100%.
We'll definitely get there soon. Tell me a little bit about, what are the growth metrics that you guys are looking at in your business that allow you to measure your success? Any numbers you guys can, you can share with us that can demonstrate what's going well, maybe what's not going so well, or what hasn't gone so well?
Sure. I mean, I think recently a lot of it's just pointed to the Hung by testnet, which is the latest phase of the testnet that we launched for the chain. I mean, it's literally been 2 days, maybe like not even 48 hours, but I think we can point to some numbers. Let me just pull up the Galaxy Quest, actually, because it's like our, it's an incentivized testnet. So I'm just going to refresh.
If it wasn't an incentivized testnet, would anybody care?
No,
I hate
would
to
not.
Say it, but not. It's true.
No, of course not. Okay. So in less than 48 hours, we've got 73,000 participants on the testnet quest.
Damn.
So that's one. I mean, we need to have that. I mean, some of the other metrics that we're looking at is like, who's creating decentralized IDs? So who's actually onboarding? So onboarding, wallet ID creations, you know, obviously these quests are a good barometer. Dapps being deployed. So we actually held a hackathon like on the DevNet before the testnet even launched over the weekend. We had 70 developers come out and we had 9 working dapps deployed by the end of the 2-day hackathon on the weekend.
Damn.
And working front end and back end. So we'll have 9 RWA focused dApps deploying imminently on the testnet. For that's not even the ones that we have built ourselves.
Right, that's not even your products. These are external.
Yeah, these are external. We're going to be launching something pretty exciting. So next week, we're going to be announcing a partnership on Tuesday. It's like this, basically one of our investors is a big company secretary in the UAE. They've worked with over 80,000 startups with advisory services, visa-related services, regulatory services, compliance services, etc., called VirtuZone. They've basically taken a floor in the DWTC, which is the Dubai World Trade Center, where the the economic free zones in the UAE and in Dubai. That is also where VARA, the regulator, is set up. That's also where we're set up. And we're basically launching a joint incubator together with VirtuZone in the DWTC building, where we have a whole floor, 17,000 square feet of office space, where we're going to be hosting companies to come build, the companies to come work on Mantra ecosystem, get connected to the regulators, utilize our licensing capabilities, et cetera. We're announcing that next week. I'm going to be investing $500,000 into five different startups to go through an incubation program over the summer, where we're going to send five teams, you know, ideally a builder and maybe a biz guy or girl, hopefully girls.
Totally. And hopefully girls. We need more girls in crypto. Holy geez.
We need a lot more for sure. But I'll invest in basically five teams, $100,000 each, that will then go through this program. And this program is basically going to be 1 month in Dubai. You get to go and live out of a hacker house. We're going to have a cool hacker house that you can come live at. Go through and work at this DWTC for a month. You're going to be able to meet the regulators. You're going to be able to meet our investor partners, learn how to pitch, learn how to talk to investors, learn how to structure your business, learn how to do all these different things in Dubai. Then we're going to fly you to Hong Kong for a month. Do the same thing here, work out of our office, get to meet everyone, get to understand the lay of the land in this Web3 space. There's a ton of stuff happening in Hong Kong too. It's a big, big, big ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to have another month in San Francisco, one of our investors, 280 Capital, they have a really cool like hacker house thing in Los Altos in the Valley. And we're going to end there after a month. So a month in Dubai, month in Hong Kong, month in the Valley, end with a demo day, end with the pitch day. We're going to have other, you know, again, five more dApps that are battle tested. We're going to put them through the ringer. It's going to be an amazing summer. I mean, that's going to be probably one of the coolest summers ever, I think, for a lot of these people. Yeah. End in the Valley, pitch day. Hopefully they've raised money. We'll help get our investors to invest in these guys. Mm-hmm. Make sure they deploy on mainnet. Again, like the idea is I invest in them, but the whole purpose is just that you basically go to market, build on our chain, and then drop a token to our community. And then we're actually going to even more, you know, further on, bring them over to Singapore for Token 2049 in September and do like, you know, whatever. It's going to be pretty cool. We're going to be doing
that. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's going to be badass.
Oh, it's so cool. I'm just curious, coming out of this hackathon, what are you seeing that other devs are excited to build on Mantra?
Yeah, so we had a bunch of different cool products. Like one of the ones that I thought was quite cool was a real estate perpetuals. You could like short real estate, which is kind of cool. Yeah. There was like a gold token. I think the real estate perps was pretty cool. I think that's pretty badass. We're seeing a lot of different stuff across the board, and we will have a very specific ask for those like five companies that I'm investing in. Yeah. I'll basically make it like five very specific ones. We need lending protocols. We need a CDP. We need a different style of perps protocols. We need prediction market. Like we need a yield spending protocol like Pendle, unless Pendle wants to come deploy, which you know, we'll see. One of the issues, not even an issue, but one of the, I guess, challenges that we have is because we're, you know, Cosmos-based, we're very, I don't want to say we're like Cosmos-aligned. I mean, we're definitely, that's even a thing. I know it's like Ethereum-aligned now. But we are stewards of the Cosmos SDK and the tech and supporters of that. But from an ecosystem perspective, we're like anything but maximalist. So like we support a number of different chains and products. But we are using Cosm Wasm smart contracts rather than Solidity and EVM. So that is one challenge, I think, but we're very much sticking to the guns there. And I think over time, there's technical reasons why we've decided to make this change, or not even change, but decision. And, you know, over time, I think people are going to start, you know, continuing to build on this great smart contract language of Cosm Wasm. It's a really powerful tool, frankly, and in my opinion, better than Solidity. So because of that, and don't hate me, Ethereum Maxis, please, for saying that. Just my personal opinion. It doesn't mean that I don't think there's good stuff happening in Ethereum. There is. So that's one of the challenges that we're seeing. But, you know, again, you're seeing the progression of people moving and devs working and building in Rust. That's a cool thing to see.
Yeah, definitely one of the challenges that I think most retail and most people don't see is how much learning needs to happen in order for devs to start to build in a new language.
Oh yeah.
And that makes innovation and development slow, right? Like we all expect, we're like, well, I got an idea. Why can't a dev just go build it? And it's like, well, okay, hold up for a sec. there's a lot of learning that needs to happen and steps that need to happen. And there's lots of some products out there that are trying to solve that by making learning languages easier and making it easier to, if you know one language, it could convert to another. And so I think the innovation across the whole space will solve that problem. And we're going to have more and more devs. Also, obviously, in a bull cycle, we're attracting a lot of great devs into the 100%. Crypto space now, which is great to see. You jumped on one of my next questions here, which was, what keeps you up at night? What are the challenges? You mentioned this smart contract language being one. What are the other things that keep you up at night?
I almost never have a hard time going to sleep because I'm stressed or worried.
It's because you're saying ohm, right?
No, actually, I should. I think maybe I say it too many times during the day. So I think it's partially just because, I mean, I think there's two things. By the way, that doesn't mean that it's easy for me to go to sleep. It's just that I'm not worried necessarily about stuff. Usually, I just think I have like an innate and uncanny ability to handle like immense loads of stress. So, you know, I say like, I do CEO coaching with a group called the Mashari Method. And, you know, I think through that experience, they have a lot of crypto founders as clients, including Brian Armstrong, Antonio from DYDX and others. It's funny because a lot of them don't really want to be CEOs. I'm not saying Brian or Antonio or anyone, but like a lot of these clients, they don't want to be they don't want to run the business.
Yeah,
I do. Like, I think I was like literally just put on this planet to do this job. This is my life's calling and I'm built for it. So because of these like just general characteristics and traits that I have, it doesn't ever seem like I'm working. It's just life. So because of that, like most of the time, 9.999999 out of 10, I'm not like so stressed I can't go to sleep. I'm actually just, my mind's racing because I'm thinking about what I want to do the next day and all these other things that we need to do and stuff like that. So it's not like, oh my God, what's going to happen? It's just like, oh shit, we have so much other stuff to do. Like, let's fucking go do it. And, you know, that's sometimes one of the better times for me to think. And I'm always like, it's not a good thing, but I'm always kind of like, I go to bed like glued to my phone and then I need to, then I like put it down and then I keep thinking about stuff and I'm like, oh shit, I need to write that down again on my notes or whatever. Totally. So I need to figure out a little bit better way to deal with that. But,
Well, you got two dogs. So are you going on daily dog walks? That's one of my, I got a dog too. So that's one of my favorite times to digest, and so many great ideas come to me in that time.
That's a good one. I mean, so like one of the things that I found that's kind of a good way to kind of separate the craziness of my schedule, because I mean, literally, like the minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed, I don't say I'm glued to my phone, but I'm like, I'm on, right? I'm thinking about it. And there's not really a waking moment when I'm not, but finding the ability to have flexibility in your schedule to do what you need to do, like that's an important part of just knowing that if I wanted to do something, I could. And just managing and owning that is a good thing for me. I really like to go to the gym when I'm in my routine. I'm traveling a lot, so that's a little bit hard, but like being able to go and I'm going to go to the gym after this podcast, for example, and just like being able to have that moment and de-stress a little bit and try not to think about it too much, sweat it out or whatever it is for you. Like, I also think, you know, I do a lot of massages here. I can like get in a state of zen where I'm almost sleeping, but I'm thinking about a ton of stuff and like can really, really get deep into it during a massage. So like, I don't know, I just found a couple things that work for me, and that's some, or haircuts. I get my haircut all the time. If I ever really blow up, if I ever really blow up, I would have like a haircut or barber who just follows me everywhere in the world.
No way.
I get my haircut like every 7 to 10 days, and I would do it every day. Honestly, it's like, it's therapeutic. I keep it tight on the sides, and this is getting long for me. I like it even shorter.
Yeah, you got a hat on right now though, so, and I got crazy long hair. I've been growing it over years, so you and I we're opposite ends of the spectrum on the hair.
It's funny because one of my partners, one of our team members, Prof K, shout out to Prof, he always tells me that like, oh, there's so many good crypto founders that are bald. And obviously you had the bald meme coin. He's like, you have good hair, John. Like, you need to not wear hats on these AMAs and podcasts and stuff because people, you got to show the hair. I'm like, bro, it's fucking 6 a.m. right now. Like, I'm not doing my hair to do this call.
It's okay. Most of our listeners are on audio, not on video. But for those who are on video, you can see John's premium hair, kind of. He showed it a little bit. He took off his hat. Maybe you got to come onto YouTube so you can check it out.
You got some killer hair too, man.
Thanks, my man. Okay. Well, that was a great sidetrack. I was not expecting that question to go in that direction. I want to talk about Hongbei Testnet, though. You guys, as you mentioned, we talked a little bit about it. You guys just released that a few days ago. There's lots of ways that our listeners can participate. Tell us a little bit about this testnet and how people can get involved.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the first things I would like to just talk about is why is it called HungBuy? And, you know, it's a little bit of an allude to the Denkun testnet that Ethereum just launched. And that was obviously predicated on Denver, Cancun, which were two important sites for the Ethereum Foundation. You know, Hong Kong, Buy, Dubai. You know, we're not necessarily targeting Hong Kong per se, but we are based here. And Hong Kong and Dubai are our two hubs, basically. We basically want to create a blockchain that becomes the tokenization corridor for the Middle East and Asia. I mean, it will be bigger than that eventually, but really like where our core competences are and where our core connections are is in the Middle East and Asia. So I think that's an important thing to just, you know, throw that out there so you can understand like why. And I don't know, frankly, I think HungBuy just sounds pretty cool. Other than that, you know, in order to get involved, we do have an incentivized test that, as I mentioned, there'll be both on and off chain activities that you can use to participate and earn points with. As I mentioned, we nearly have like 75,000 people who've already begun, which is crazy. We are also doing Genesis drops to, you know, strong community partners. We've announced some Gen drops to different NFT communities in not only the Cosmos, but on Ethereum actually. So Pudgies are getting a drop, Cosmos Projects, Bad Kids, BitKids, which is like the derivative, Celestine Sloths. I think we're the first project dropping to Celestine Sloths. That's like the Tia Celestia NFT project that's like gone absolutely bonkers this past week. That's why I said lazy morning in the beginning. Pudgies, as I mentioned, and then we're also doing it to other Cosmos or just other related projects. Stake, we're definitely to Atom Stakers and a few others, which I can't name just yet. But anyway, so we have a lot of different ways to kind of be able to get exposure to this drop, be able to participate on this point system on the incentivized testnet. We will have additional things coming actually just on the existing platform, not even on mainnet, but will then be deployed. For example, we'll be doing yield vaults and different types of vaults that will then deploy stablecoin liquidity or other types of liquidity onto mainnet after the yield term ends, which will be attractive, obviously. So like there's a lot of different ways that you can participate. If you're obviously a developer, that hackathon and incubator program that's coming up for the summer will be badass. We'll actually have a proper ecosystem fund as well, incubation program outside of what I just described. So there's a number of different ways. And, you know, if you're interested in getting more involved, hit us up on, you know, X, holler at us in Telegram. Although like right now our Telegram's like going crazy. It's so hard to respond to stuff. Telegram, Discord. But that being said, we're pretty on top of it. And, you know, we'll definitely be in touch if you have questions and want to learn more.
Sweet. Awesome. We'll also put a link in the show notes for everybody to learn more about HungBuy Testnet and to get involved. Incredible. 75,000 people in under 48 hours. Just what an incredible start. Excited to see where that's going to go next. How long is the points program running for? Have you put a timeline on it?
So up until mainnet, a few months. So I'm a little hesitant to give like a hard date, but just to give some like general baselines. So what I say is we want to do it before the US election and after the summer.
Okay.
So that's not a little bit of a small window.
That's a small window. Yeah. Yeah. I feel you on that. Why before the US election?
Because God only knows what's happening after that.
Yeah. I figured that was going to be the case. Oh, boy.
Just anyway, take out that degree of whatever the hell, you know, and just that's going to be the, you know, talk of the town. So let's just get out there before.
Totally. Totally. Awesome. John, this has just been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much to you and your team.
Thank you.
For everything you guys have done. It's amazing the amount of legwork that happens in the background that most of us do not see. And dealing with regulators in the way that you have is a noble effort that somebody needs to do it.
Yes, sir.
And so appreciate you and your team doing it. Before we wrap, where can our listeners find you on X, or where are you active, and anywhere else that you want to tell our listeners to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say X is probably the best, along with Telegram, although my Telegram is pretty swamped, as you can imagine. X, I'm JP_Mullin, M-U-L-L-I-N 888. So hit me up on X. We have this thing with eights over here. So it's a lucky number in Asia, very fortuitous. Mantra currently has 888,888,888 ohms as its supply. Okay. So very fortuitous. but that number will change with the mainnet coming online. But still, that's a very lucky number here. So we like to, that's one of our, in numerology, we have our mantras, we have our numbers, like ohms and eights and things like that. That's how we do it over here.
I love how intentional you are with all of 100%. Your,
everything.
All these micro decisions, but very intentional.
100%. I mean, it's all about the details. It's all about these little things. And I think when you think about this stuff every waking moment, because I just can't even help it. Like if you think about it all the time and you do this for several years, like this, the end output, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's amazing. So. Fantastic. All right. Well, John, thanks so much for getting up at 6 a.m. to join us on Milk Road Radio.
My pleasure.
Appreciate your time. Definitely will be following Mantra. We might have to write a Milk Road Pro report. That's a weekly report we write on various tokens in the space. And I think we might have to do one on Ohm coming up. If you guys want to see a Milk Road Pro report, if you guys are listening, send us a note in Discord or hit us up on Twitter and let us know. We might write that. But until then, we'll be following closely. And JPM, have yourself a great day in Hong Kong.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's been awesome.
Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.